Hello and welcome. This is Your Call. I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. Mega ride-hailing companies like Uber and Lyft have certainly sent shockwaves right through the industry. From New York to L.A., taxi companies have reported major financial losses ever since hailing a car with your phone became in vogue. In Chicago, for example, taxi drivers say they've seen their revenue decline by nearly 40% in the last 3 years. That's according to the Chicago Cab Drivers Union. In Los Angeles, the city records indicate taxis have seen about a 30% decline in the total number of trips. So how those two companies are regulated differently may still remain a contentious issue, but certainly they are regulated differently. In cities around the world, including Paris and London, taxi drivers are protesting Uber's ability to evade regulatory limits, but the companies are facing even greater scrutiny. For example, on Monday in San Francisco, the city subpoenaed Uber and Lyft and all their records. They're investigating the company's practices regarding providing service to poor neighborhoods, and they're looking into whether drivers create unsafe road conditions out there. The companies have also come under fire for their use of independent contractors as opposed to employees, and there also are studies about their impact on traffic. So today, we're going to open up the phone lines and we're going to talk to drivers in the industry, from cabbies to Uber and Lyft drivers, and we want to discuss the policies that need to go next. By the way, a week from now, we're going to take the information that we gather today to the people who are going to make those rules. So let's start the discussion with a driver. Kelly DeSaint is a taxi driver in San Francisco. He's driven full-time for both Lyft and Uber, more than 3,000 rides to his credit. He also runs a blog about his experience driving in San Francisco. And Kelly DeSaint is here in the studio. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure. Also, Ron Childress. Ron has driven using Uber for the past 3 years. He's online from Vallejo. Is that where you are now, Ron? Are you moving around?
No, I'm stuck here. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Thanks so much for being here. And we want to invite you early on in this conversation. Do you drive a cab or a Lyft or Uber or maybe some other ride-hailing service? What are the biggest issues facing you if you're a driver? What are some of the issues you've seen if you are a rider? What are some of the public safety concerns that you think should be taken into account? And what are your thoughts about how cab drivers are regulated differently from Uber and Lyft drivers? What have been your experiences if you've taken one of the ride-hailing services? Give us a call, 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. So, Kelly, let's start with you.
All right.
It's interesting. You've started driving for Lyft and Uber, and then you went to a cab. Somehow that surprises me. I would have thought you maybe would have gone the other direction. What made you make the switch?
Well, I started driving for Lyft in early 2014. It was a completely different type of service back then. There was a lot of social elements. Of course, people sat up front, the whole fist bump thing. So I kind of just ended up doing it as sort of a fluke. A project I've been working on for a long time ended, and I needed, you know, something to do, so I did that. And I didn't start driving for Uber until May of that year, when they had a sign up bonus for $500. So I figured I'll go get the $500. And then I started driving for both services at that point and immediately began to notice the difference between the two.
What differences?
Well, again, Lyft is a much, casual, was then. It's, I think now they've merged into being identical services. But back then, it was a more friendly service. It was a more social aspect to it. People would talk to you, and they would often sit up front. But in Uber, like after the first night I was, driving for Uber, and everybody sat in the back. You know, I had to move my front seat forward. You know, it was like it began to feel like a cab driver. Mm-hmm. There was no social elements to it anymore. And then Uber started the price wars, and then the rates went down and further down, which was absurd because nobody was complaining about the rates. And early on, when I was driving, most passengers were really happy with the service, and they just wanted a ride. And they, with the taxi industry the way it had been before, with limited cabs on the road, it was really difficult for people to get cab rides. There's a lot of cab drivers turning down fares, et cetera, et cetera. We all know the stories of how bad the taxi service was. So people were just happy to get a decent ride, and they were happy to pay for it. And then,
well, I'm not sure people do know how bad it was to get a cab. Is that why you think Uber and Lyft actually did take off, because cab service was just that bad?
Well, there weren't enough cabs on the road. There was only at the peak time now, there was like 2,000 cabs at the most. SFMTA, when they took over the cab industry, they tried to initiate an 8,000 series cabs for when it was busy, as well as an S medallion for when it was busy. Now, these were special medallions.
Of course, I don't know what any of that means.
They're just special medallions that allow cabs to go on the street when it's busy, as opposed to regular medallion cabs that can operate 24/7. So they wanted to increase the cabs on the road, so there would be more cabs for people to get rides. Okay. But that just happened too late. You know, Uber had already, you know, and Lyft had, you know, started already, and that just took off.
Now, is it the same here as it is in, I know, in New York? Over the last, I don't know, 60 years, you had to buy a medallion. And in some cases, that's the right to actually own and drive the cab. They would change hands and stay in families, and you could pay up to like $1 million. Is it the same here, or is that a New York phenomenon?
The medallion system in San Francisco originally started off as a free medallion system. It was just a way to limit taxis and to provide a safety net for drivers, because if they got the medallion and they have to put their name on a list, so you had to wait till your name got up on the list and then you'd get the medallion. There was a transaction fee, and then, you know, you would lease your medallion out to the cab company when you weren't driving, and then they would pay you for the lease of the medallion, because you had to have a medallion to operate the car.
Okay.
But they were free. You know, I mean, there's a nominal charge or whatever. Or sweat equity is what they're called, you know, earned medallions. So with Prop A, when the taxi industry went over to the SFMTA, that's when they started to sell medallions for $250,000. And this started about 2009, 2010, when they were selling the medallions. They started first at $125,000, and then they went up to $250,000. So right as Uber and Lyft are starting to you know, emerge, the taxis, the medallions, they started, city started selling medallions, that which now are completely worthless.
Totally worthless.
So it's a different system. Medallion systems are different in each, you know, city. But in San Francisco, it was different than it was in New York, because they didn't start selling them until 2009, 2010.
Which is really late, given that Uber and Lyft had already, the advent was there. But still, spending $250,000 to have your own taxi, only to have Lyft and Uber sort of usurp the you know, the riders. That's just
there are a lot of very angry, you know, what we call Prop A medallion, you know, holders who bought medallions, and they're paying loans, $250,000 loan on a medallion, and you know, they're having to work other jobs or default on their loan, going, you know, go bankrupt.
It's amazing. So you went from driving Uber, Lyft to Uber, and then you went to driving a cab.
Well,
why?
I was documenting the experience the whole time. I publish zines and, you know, write all the time. So I was documenting the experience. And with Lyft, it was sort of like, okay, this is sort of funny. It's super goofy. I loved kind of making fun of the company, because they sort of, they're ripe for that. They're like this sort of dorky kid that you can pick on. And when I went to Uber, it just became so unpleasant. It's such an unpleasant company to deal with. And there became situations where I felt very vulnerable on the street. And I had nobody to contact for help. You know, I would try to call Uber. I just email them and saying, I just had this situation happen. I mean, picking up the wrong passenger who's intoxicated, half-naked female in my back on my car, my personal car, you know. And it's like, I'm scared, you know, out of my wits. But there's nobody to communicate with, to say, how do I deal with this situation? The insurance question never went away. It was always in my mind, you know. There was, even if it wasn't your fault, if you got into an accident, if somebody hit you, there's no guarantee that the whole thing would work out. And with Lyft, they had a $2,500 deductible, even if it wasn't your fault. So if somebody slams into your car, you still got to pay $2,500 to get your car repaired. And I mean, my personal insurance is only five. Mm-hmm. Of course, personal insurance is not going to cover me in this situation. So that was a huge thing. But what I did kind of realize through the whole experience was that I really love driving in San Francisco. That probably makes me, insane.
Rare, and, for sure.
You know, I wouldn't deny that, but I really like driving in the city. You know, the hills, the craziness, it just, you know, I really enjoyed it. And the only way to drive in the city, unless you want to, you know, spend money on getting, you know, insurance, commercial insurance for your car, and maintaining the upkeep of a car and all this stuff, you know, it's like, unless you want to go down that route, which I didn't, I went to a taxi. And in a taxi, I'm completely protected. I go to you know, National Cab. I pick up the cab I'm going to drive, pick up the medallion, the key, and I go drive, bring it back.
Easy
peasy.
That's
it, yeah.
Ron DeSaint, are you still with us? You drive for Uber, and wondering what made you decide to start driving for that ride sharing, actually ride hailing, and I guess in some cases also ride sharing. But Ron, what made you decide to start driving for Uber?
Thank you. It's Ron Childress. I started about 3 years ago. My father actually got started, and he called me up and asked me to guess where he was, and I, of course, had no idea. And he said, I'm Ubering, and I didn't know what that meant. So it started from there, and I've been doing it for about 3 years. And I got started because it was, at that time, it was a great way to make money. But that was 3 years ago, and things have changed pretty dramatically since then.
How so?
Well, they've reduced rates by about half of what they were charging 3 years ago, and the situation now is that they're subsidizing the rides. There were reports that have come out that riders are paying about half of what they should be for these rides in order for Uber to make money, and that was evidenced by the $700 million loss last quarter. These rides are being subsidized, so people are getting, you know, first taste is free, and then they're going to get hooked on these things, and then they're going to have to raise the rates in order for them to stay in business.
So give me an example, Ron. The rates, where do they start and where are they now?
Well, in the East Bay, they charge 85 cents a mile, and then there is a small booking fee. I think it's $1.85 booking fee, 85 cents a mile. I think it's 15 cents a minute, which is nothing. That's substantially lower than, well, it's half of what it was 3 years ago, and it's substantially lower than what it needs to be for them to stay in business. It's just not sustainable. They right now have the benefit of having huge amounts of money from investors who just pour it in like there's no tomorrow, but at some point, someone's got to take a look and say, hey, we have to fix this. They are offering bonuses and incentives, which I'm sure we'll talk about, for drivers to get a certain number of rides in for a week, us on to the riders. It's money that Uber is subsidizing, and that they've got a lot of highly educated bean counters who are telling them that's the way to go, and they won't listen to someone who's driving and say that's not the way to go. You need to be charging for your service, and it's got to be sustainable, and this just isn't.
Well, they are a $70 billion behemoth. So they must be doing something right. But what you're saying is if they continue the bonus and incentive and underwriting practice that apparently they just recently started doing, you're saying that it will collapse because there's diminishing returns?
Yeah, but who's paying for these bonuses and incentives? This is not being paid for by, you know, they have one product that they're selling. They're selling rides, and they're not making enough money on the rides to cover the, you know, they're not paying for the cost of this. It boggles my mind that they don't see this, but you know, they know better than me, I guess. These bonuses that they have certain time zones during like rush hours and things where they're paying drivers almost twice what the rate is. So it's like 1.8, 1.9 for a certain time frame, the rider still pays the one-time rate, so they're paying 85 cents a mile, where the driver could be earning $1.50 a mile. Who's paying for the difference? You know, right now Uber is, but at some point it can't be Uber. That has to be paid for by the riders.
Well, fare structures is certainly one of the issues that drivers have with Uber and Lyft and companies like that. Michael in Oakland, that was one of your concerns. Is that right? Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for taking me on the air. It absolutely is one of my concerns. I started several years ago, too, and when I started, it was I could easily make $2,000 a week. They were the rates were $1.50 a mile then. They're now 85 cents. I could not make anywhere close to the $2,000 a week. Uber, well, I actually enjoy driving the company. I enjoy the passengers for the most part. They're very decent people. You have some good times, good conversations. But Uber is making its money on the backs of its drivers and showing nothing more than contempt. And, you know, they just can get so many people so easily because it is an easy job. You know, if you don't mind driving, if you have a decent car, you can make a livable wage.
But still to this day, you think you can make a livable wage driving for Uber?
Well, you know, I'm 73 years old and I'm retired, and I have retirement income, and my wife works. So the money that I make is money that I really don't need.
Well, yeah, so that's the argument, is that Uber is supplemental income. It's not, you know, primary income.
That's I should have said that rather than a living wage. It was much more living wage at $1.50 a mile than it is at 85 cents.
But $1.50, do you know how much a taxi is for a mile? $2.75, 55 cents a minute.
Yeah, so why is somebody taking a taxi?
People still take taxis, but, I mean, that's how low Uber is gone. And they didn't start out at, you know, 85 cents a mile.
No, in 3 years they've gone from $1.50 to 85. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the only reason Uber or Lyft or any of the other rideshare programs have a chance at all in breaking into this economy is the taxi service is so poor.
Well, it used to be poor, but it's not anymore.
Kelly DeSaint, you certainly are positioned to weigh in on that.
Yeah, it was before. That's what opened the door for Uber and Lyft. There's this false narrative that Uber likes to perpetuate, and I've often found that Uber drivers like to shoot themselves in the foot by perpetuating it. But, you know, the taxi service was really bad before because there weren't enough cabs. And it created a lot of problems. Cab companies were not treating drivers well, et cetera, et cetera. But that's no longer the case. I mean, sort of looking back at the past is not going to really help us at this point. You know, all drivers at this point, whether you're driving a cab, a town car, UberX, or Lyft, you're getting the short end of the stick. All drivers are getting the short end of the stick right now.
And treatment of drivers is one of the critiques of some of the services. And Jamal in Oakland, that's what you wanted to talk about. Yes? Welcome.
Yes. I've been driving with Uber almost like 5 years, and I've been driving black SUV, not like those guys I see most of the time. They've been talking about taxi and the lower part of Uber, sidecar, like Uber X and those kind of stuff. But generally speaking, there is a lot to say about Uber. Uber is not a good company. At the end of the day, it's not a good company. It suck you up, suck your blood, and then throw you away. I've been driving for about 5 years, as I said, driving black. One thing that I want to talk about is the rating, the so-called rating. The so-called rating is totally unfair for the driver. It might not affect the Uber X's and Excel like the black, because those guys, they get too many calls. But for the Uber black, you don't get too many calls. The way they design that rating system, anyone, a drunk guy, whatever, some people, noisy people, they want to play on the radio, they want to dance inside the radio, you cannot open your mouth. You open your mouth, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get a negative rating. Uber, you work with them. They should try to find out from you what happened. Why are you getting a negative rating? Especially if you supposedly have a decent record with them. I mean, you didn't kick any driver. You didn't kick any customer. You didn't have any fighting with the customer. You didn't harass any customer. You didn't abuse any customer. If you don't have, you have a clean record with Uber, then there is no need for any passenger to give you a negative rating.
Okay, the rating system is one of those things. Thanks a lot. We appreciate the call, Jamal. Ron Childress, what do you think? Has the rating system served to make drivers behave better so that they will get a good rating, or is it kind of a is it punishing?
You know, I wanted to respond to something Kelly said a few minutes ago.
Which is?
About the services that taxis and cabs provide. Yes, it's true that it has improved. It's had to, because they've had these companies, Uber and Lyft, who begun competing. But, and this isn't a reflection on you, Kelly, but it's far from true that the service is no longer a problem. I hear every day I get people who complain about taxes in my car. I've never had anybody.
And every day I get people who complain about Uber and Lyft in my car. So, you know, tit for tat on that one. I don't understand. I still don't. Boggles.
I wasn't finished and you interrupted me. And I'm trying not to make this a personal attack. I just wish you'd let me finish my point. There is absolutely still a problem, but it's not just with taxis. It's with all of them. But to say that it's over is not true. Now, the question regarding the ratings, and by the way, Kelly, I read your blog, and some of that is based on what you put in the blog there. So, you know, that's
well, it's actually a column in the San Francisco Examiner, but, you know, I'll just let that one know.
Well, if you're going to just interrupt me, I'm going to hang up. I'm not interested in
talking. I was just saying it's not a blog. It's just a column in the newspaper.
Ron, how typical is it that there's this sort of tension, let's call it, between ride hailing services and cabbies? Is this kind of typical?
Mm-hmm. Okay, there wasn't any tension in my mind until just now. It's not, you know, we're taking this too personally, I'm not attacking Kelly by any stretch of the imagination, so I hope that he'll take that into account. You asked me about the rating system. I've had over 5,000 rides. It's a 4.88 because you can't please everybody. I think that it is unfortunate that you can get someone who's, you know, kicked their dog this morning or had some problem that can just turn around and give you a bad rating for no reason whatsoever, and that happens. But it does work to, if you're habitually a bad rating, then you know there's a problem with you. If you get it once in a while, then it's not your problem. So I don't take the ratings all that seriously because mine is pretty good.
Okay.
But all I can do is treat people the best I can, be as pleasant as I can, and they have to just take it the way they're going to. So I don't pay a lot of attention to it. Now, those who have habitually poor ratings take a chance on having the service disconnected. And they need to examine, you know, what they're doing wrong in order to be a little more presentable as an Uber driver or a Lyft driver or a taxi driver. I mean, it's just, you know, habitually low means a problem.
Okay. We're talking to Ron Childress. He's driven for Uber for the past 3 years. And Kelly DeSaint, he's a former Lyft and Uber driver and now is a taxi driver in San Francisco. And there are certainly different regulations on these different industries. And how is that changing the way the ride hailing and cabbie services are delivered? Are there differences in how those companies handle pickups and deliveries and drop-offs in poor neighborhoods? What's been your ride-hailing experience? We hope you'll join us. We're going to take a quick break and come right back.
You Your call is better when you get involved. If you have a question, idea, or experience to contribute to today's conversation, you may call 866-798-8255. Even though lines have filled up, our phone number is still 866-798-8255. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. You may leave a comment on the show's website, set a bookmark for yourcallradio.org, and you can also tweet us at yourcallradio.
Welcome back. For those of you just joining us now, I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. We're podcasting the show. You can find out more information at yourcallradio.org, and you can listen there to past shows and find out what's coming up next. We love it when you have show ideas for us, so please drop us a line at feedback@yourcallradio.org or give us a call, 866-798-8255. Coming up tomorrow, it's the Media Roundtable, where we'll be discussing coverage of the week's news, and there's plenty of news that happened this past week, so be sure to tune in tomorrow. Today, we're talking with taxi drivers and drivers for ride-hailing services. Ron Childress has driven for Uber for the past 3 years. He's in Vallejo, and he joins us on the line. Here in the studio is Kelly DeSaint. He went from Lyft and Uber driver to taxi driver, so he's got a basis for comparison for sure. And we invite your calls at 866-798-8255. No doubt these two entities are regulated differently. Kelly, can you weigh in on how that's impacting the employee/contractors?
Well, especially because Uber and Lyft, they can't train their drivers because that, I guess, means that they're not independent contractors. So the biggest problem you're seeing with this model of the independent contractor is drivers coming in the city not knowing how to drive, not knowing how the cities work, and not being trained and not having anybody tell them how it's supposed to be worked. So that's why you have a lot of people, you know, Uber and Lyft drivers going the wrong way down one-way streets, double parking where they shouldn't be double parking, and just doing a lot of really crazy stuff. And it's just because they're not trained. You know, taxi drivers have to go to taxi school for a week and pass a test in order to, you know, operate a taxi cab. While Uber and Lyft drivers, they download the app, they watch a couple videos, which they don't have to watch. You could turn them on and walk out of the room, and that's it. So, and that's because Uber and Lyft are so afraid to actually, you know, control the drivers through training or through, you know, any type of thing that this is what that's creating.
Ron Childress, certainly the taxi industry does face tougher regulations, regulations that Uber and Lyft don't. So what are your thoughts on how the regulations differ?
They do differ. I think they should. There are different types of rides, and people have a choice whether or not they're going to take Uber or a taxi. I have no issue with that. I absolutely agree that there are way too many people who don't know how to drive in San Francisco, for example. But I would ask, you know, I would suggest that it's not just Uber and Lyft that double park and do, you know, wrong turns from the wrong lanes. I've seen plenty of taxis do that, and I've seen plenty of regular people do that. That's not something that's endemic just to Uber and Lyft. The problem is Uber and Lyft, there are unfortunately too many of them in the city, and they've got a big target in their window, an Uber or a Lyft sticker. So those are the ones you remember. But I've seen plenty of bad driving from everybody. It's not just Uber and Lyft. I would absolutely agree that there is a problem in that Uber and Lyft drivers, many of them drive late, and they shouldn't be allowed. There should be much more strict background checks, in my opinion, on Uber and Lyft. They should have fingerprinting. I'm not opposed to that at all. That's, you know, that's just a no-brainer. They should have the fingerprinting. They should have the background checks, and there should be a bigger push towards education and how to get around, especially in San Francisco. They make it very, very difficult to drive in the city. which is why I don't. I simply don't drive in the city. I drop somebody off and I get out of there as quick as I can. But to say that having a week's worth of training is enough to get you going on the streets of San Francisco, I don't agree with that at all. But at least it's something.
Okay.
You know, I will hand you that. At least it's something.
Let's hear from another driver, Lucy in San Francisco. Hi.
Hi, guys.
Hi, go right ahead. You might want to turn your radio down a bit.
Oh, I don't think my radio is on.
Okay, you drive for Lyft and Uber, is that right?
That's right. I have done plenty of both. I have almost 20,000 rides around San Francisco. I fell in love with it the first ride I have ever given to somebody. I just love the... You know, if you are like... if you are pathologically extroverted, it's a perfect job. I've been supporting a couple of kids in San Francisco on it. It is definitely true that we work a little harder for the money now, but the money is still there. But, I mean, I do have to say, I think something nobody has brought up yet is how much employment it has brought to people who otherwise wouldn't be that easily employable, like people who are parents and can work, you know, any shift they like, basically. That is not to say that you don't make more money if you work just certain shifts. But so they talk about 40,000 drivers in San Francisco. That's 40,000 jobs. What kind of work is going to replace those jobs? Mm-hmm. And sure, I mean, I totally take what the drivers are saying about the money is little less and it sucks compared to a good job. But what other jobs are there available to people who, you know, really, you don't need a high school education to do this job. It's really pretty easy. All you need is a clean driving record and a car. And you can get out there, and you can get paid the next day. So
okay.
You know, I think there is a little too many negatives brought up. That I mean, I do think there is more regulation needed, for sure. There's no question about it. Another point that nobody has brought up is, I think, I haven't heard the whole program, that the bonuses for the people that are coming down from Sacramento are actually way more favorable, because in Sacramento you can't count on getting the same number of rides you can in San Francisco, but it's really the same market. You know, I'm talking about Lyft right now because I don't know exactly. That's the one I know about. If you come down here, you do a certain number of rides, you get your big weekly bonus. I have to do almost twice as many rides to get the same bonus as a Sacramento driver, so it's plenty worth it to them. And again, what kind of a job are they going to be finding in Sacramento that, you know, you don't need any training or education for?
Okay.
So that's my input.
Thank you, Judy. And it's true. I'm sure both you, Ron, and you, Kelly, would agree that these are jobs that otherwise wouldn't exist and that it's sustainability for some people. Yes, Kelly?
I say, you know, it is a supplemental income unless you're driving a lot of hours. I would assume that somebody who's making, you know, their primary income from driving, and you see a lot of articles about this, and I see a lot of evidence on Facebook groups and things like that, they're pulling 60, 70 hours a week driving. That's a lot. That's more than a full-time job.
Yeah, actually, Ron, you know, I have heard that in order to really make it viable, some people do drive 18, 20 hours a day and try to stay close to areas that they know is going to be high density and high volume of rides, and that sometimes drivers are exhausted, making them perhaps more dangerous. Can you weigh in on that?
Oh, sure. You know, that's absolutely true. There's a difference between working 60 and 70 hours a week and working 18 and 20 hours a day. You know, this is a business that I own. I've had the benefit of having several businesses, and my Uber is another business. So I don't do it full-time, but I was doing it full-time for a while. And when you own a business, working 60 or 70 hours a week is not unheard of. That's you know, this isn't just a job, it's a business. You have to manage your income, you have to manage your expenses, you have to manage your, you know, all the things you have to pay for with a business. You have to do your own taxes. And many of these people who drive for these companies just simply don't understand that, don't accept that. So working 60 or 70 hours a week, is it more than if I were working, you know, flipping burgers at McDonald's? Absolutely. But it is also my own business that I'm doing. Now, having said that, there ought to be some, and I know Lyft does this, there ought to be some mechanism built into the Uber app that says, hey, you've worked 14 hours today. You need to take a 6-hour break or an 8-hour break or whatever it is. I know Lyft has that, and the Uber share the same. That's just, that is dangerous, and that is absolutely a problem.
Well, the subpoena that was issued by the city of San Francisco Monday is seeking data from Lyft and Uber. They're looking into whether drivers create road hazards, whether they are exhausted. Are they double parking? Are they parking in bike lanes, blocking businesses? So, you know, those, are they creating unsafe road conditions in some way? So some of those practices are being looked into.
I don't understand how getting this data is going to tell somebody whether they're parking in a bike lane or double parking on the street. I don't understand that at all. I mean, I understand the questions, but the data is not going to provide that.
Mayor Ed Lee disagrees. He says, quote, I think asking for data is good, and that data should inform us on how to relieve traffic congestion, unquote.
They want the GPS records.
But that's not what I was saying.
The GPS records, though, would have their location and would be able to show where in the density in the city that most of the cars are creating, you know, gridlock. So that's it. They want the GPS data. That's what they're after for that, to understand how.
I understand, but I agree. That is fine. That's something that they should have with no question. But what I'm saying is that kind of data is not going to tell you if someone is blocking traffic, you know, they've stopped in the middle of the street to pick up a person, or whether it be taxi cabs or Uber, because I've seen them both, or if they stop in a bike.
Could I just touch on that 1 second? Because you said that you drive in the East Bay, and when you get into the city, you immediately turn around and deadhead back to the East Bay. So how much of traffic in San Francisco are you actually seeing?
More than I care to.
All right.
I'm sensing some tension here. I have a hunch that this is probably pretty typical. Once again, you're competing for the same travelers.
I don't have a problem
dollars.
With Uber drivers. Yeah. Uber drivers tend to have a problem with me. So
interesting.
I was one. I used to be an Uber driver, so I've been there. I understand.
Well, we have lots of people who want to weigh in on this. Judy in San Francisco, thanks for waiting. Go right ahead.
Oh, thank you for... Hold on, let me turn this down. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to tell you about the most ridiculous accident I've ever seen in my life. I haven't seen many, but this guy cut perpendicularly across 5 lanes of traffic, and inevitably he got hit by one of the people. And when he came out of, and his car did a, he got hit so that he did a 360 degree turn, and when he came out of his car, the lady who hit him was shaking. She was in shock, and he, the first thing he said is, "Oh, my passenger told me that I had to make this turn." Mm-hmm. So, and then I said, "Well, we're you know, calling the police." And he said, "Oh, we don't have to call the police, do we? Nobody's hurt." I said, "This lady doesn't know if she's hurt. She's in shock." And I said, "Do you work for Uber or work for Lyft?" He told me he works for Lyft. I mean, if he had been a taxi driver, he would have probably known the city. You know, he would have gone to the school. He would have known that if he had gone one block up, he could have made the same, you know, come around to the same place he was trying to get to, cutting across 5 lanes of traffic. I think the training is a really, really big issue. I don't know what they did about insurance. I don't know who carries the insurance, if it's Lyft or him, but... you know, that guy should never be able to get insurance again, honestly.
Okay, thanks for the call. Ron Childress, you want to weigh in on that?
Only to say that anecdotal evidence does not equate to everybody. That's, you know, she saw one accident. I understand that, but it could have very easily have been a cab driver, too. It's not, you know, one anecdotal piece of evidence doesn't affect the entire industry.
Okay, thank you.
I've never had an accident, so, you know, does that balance it out?
I reckon. Well, you know what? I have a hunch. I have a hunch. Anyone can have an accident. You're right. But I think that now that we can look at the stickers and see in the windshield, this is a Lyft driver or an Uber driver, it kind of makes it easier to identify people who are, in fact, part of the ride-hailing service. So
I'm not defending or excusing a bad driver's, you know, dumb moves. It could happen to... It could be anybody. It could be Uber, Lyft, taxi, or just a person who's going and just made a wrong turn. It happens all the time.
Okay.
One thing that she did bring up, I'd like to point out, is that the passenger told him to do that. And it should be noted that the passengers dictate a lot of what the drivers do in terms of waiting, double parking, and where they're dropped off and where they're picked up. So that is something I was wanting to make sure was brought up in this discussion, is how the passengers do impact the driver's behavior on the streets.
Well, before we take another call, I wanted to talk with both of you about, as a taxi driver and as a ride-hailing service driver, what are your company's thoughts on services in poor neighborhoods? Ron Childress, that has been one of the issues that's been brought up. How do the companies handle the issue of providing adequate service to poor neighborhoods?
I wouldn't have any idea. I don't work for Uber. Mm-hmm. You know, when I get a call, I go, and it just depends on. It doesn't matter where the car is. I go to pick it up if I can get there safely. If it's something I can't safely do because I've missed an exit or something else, then I don't go. But if someone calls me, you know, I just go. I can't speak to the company's attitudes on that.
How about among drivers themselves? Have you had an opportunity to just talk amongst other drivers about the issue?
It's not something that's ever come up for me. I don't know what to tell you there. The one issue may simply be the fact that the hail companies rely on people having smartphones in order to call for their service. Now, if there is an area where there aren't a lot of smartphones available because of costs, then it would definitely affect that area. They don't have any other mechanism by which to call a car versus a cab company, which has telephones as well as the smartphone. And so, in that case, it may be that cabs can get to an area where there aren't a lot of smartphones. I can only say, I won't even say anecdotally anything, but that's my take on it.
Okay. Kelly DeSaint, you want to weigh in on how traditional cab companies handle that issue?
Well, on both sides of the coin. I mean, historically, we know that cabs have not served the African-American community, and it's, like the Lenny Kravitz song, Mr. Cab Driver, then from the 80s. It was just, like, well-known that if you're black and you're trying to catch a cab, it's going to be difficult. My column in the Examiner last week touched on that subject, where I picked up a young black guy in Tesoma, and cabs were passing him by, and so I picked him up. I mean, personally, I pick up everybody. I don't have a problem. A lot of it has to do, though, and I've seen a lot of Lyft and Uber drivers in the Facebook group saying that they won't pick up in certain neighborhoods. When the orders come in, they just cancel them or whatever. A lot of it has to do with fear and fear of the unknown, and that's a cross-platform. That everybody is dealing with that in all capacities. So it's just this cultural problem that we have in America of not understanding each other. So I don't think it's centered on a particular industry. It's like sort of culturally as a whole. So my experience.
Okay. All right. Let's go to another call. KDF in Oakland. Welcome. Thanks for holding.
Thank you so much. I did want to point out to the gentleman that claimed that cab drivers regularly refuse to convey, because starting in 1981, when I became a San Francisco taxi cab driver at DeSoto, I learned right away that if you refuse to convey someone, that's a $400 ticket.
Mm-hmm.
So I think his claim is not quite grounded in reality. Also, I wanted to answer your question about rules and regulations. When the TNCs, which is the formal term for ride-hailing companies,
mm-hmm.
and that stands for transportation network companies, because Uber has always claimed that they're not in the business of transportation, they're in the business of something else. Anyway, so that's what they call themselves, transportation network companies. They were overseen by a California state organization that had no or very few enforcement officers. That was the California Public Utilities Commission. And a friend of mine and I started a campaign to take the oversight of the TNCs away from the CPUC and give it to someone else. And a number of months ago, Governor Brown saw the wisdom of our approach and in fact has taken the oversight of the TNCs away from the CPUC and given it to the California Transportation Authority, which has among it the Department of Motor Vehicles, also the California Highway Patrol, and so on. And because of that move, that's why Uber has been forced to begin to recognize the need to pay attention to any regulation. I say that in all seriousness. We in the taxicab industry, well, I'm not in it anymore because I sold my medallion in 2015, but nonetheless, coming from the perspective of taxi people, Uber's business model is fraud. It's fraud in the sense of the insurance. It's fraud in the sense of how they manipulate their drivers, and it's fraud in the sense of how they manipulate their investors.
Wow, so, that's quite a charge.
To enter mm-hmm. into this conversation is, mm-hmm. what do your guests think disabled people should do if the TNCs are able to completely destroy the taxicab industry, leaving all disabled people without individual fares? Because in the taxicab industry in San Francisco, we have such a thing as called paratransit. There's even a paratransit board. And what paratransit means is taxicab drivers and taxicab companies spend their own money to make sure that people with disabilities, people in wheelchairs, people who need the services of a service dog are included in our agora, in our marketplace.
Okay, I'm going to let Ron Childress weigh in on that. Ron, do you want to take the first bite at the apple? I know it's hard to know where to begin. That was a lot of information to take in, but you want to work...
Well, it's a lot of information, and typically it's the same kind of you know, nonsense I hear all the time. It's, is it true that Uber and Lyft drivers may not have wheelchair lifts on their car? Yes, that's true. That's something that needs to be addressed. Is it true that Uber and Lyft drivers don't help disabled or people with service dogs? No, that's not true. I help hundreds of people who are in wheelchairs, and I've had a dozen service dogs in my car. It's not an issue for most people. Is it an issue for some? Yeah, they should be kicked out. But it's not as big an issue as it's made out to be by members of the taxi cab community who are threatened by Uber and Lyft. That's just my opinion.
You know, I must say, when we first came up with the idea to do the program, I thought, oh, it's interesting. I had no idea how many controversies were swirling around.
Can of worms you opened up.
Let me just read this email, Celine. This email from Celine says it has come out in news organizations that organizations such as Uber that have GPS and other surveillance put surveillance on people. One, you download your app or even get your phone number. And I've heard one of the many scandals that came out at Uber recently was that drivers were found to access people's personal info to stalk them or for other sinister reasons. I just had no idea. Ron, do you face that kind of scrutiny and concern from riders? And
well,
I had no idea.
First of all, that's partly true. It's not entirely true. Drivers haven't got access to people's personal information. Now, unfortunately, some of the people at Uber headquarters did, and you know that is a huge problem, and they should be firing people left and right who are involved in that. Drivers, no, they don't have access to people's personal information like that. That's just not true. And I've had 5,000 plus rides, and I've never had anybody look at me like I'm stalking them. It's just, you know, it's anecdotal evidence, or it's just falsehoods that are being spread, and there are falsehoods on both sides, but it's this kind of nonsense that is hard to overcome.
Yeah, imagine you've heard that sort of thing before whenever you're dealing with technology. Another email from Anne says, I remember how hard it used to be to get a taxi, so it makes sense that Uber and Lyft has filled the void, and it is income for people. But what kind of city does San Francisco want to be? Did we vote to allow 30,000 more cars on the road? I totally understand the need they serve, but as an urban biker, I must concur that Lyft drivers and Uber drivers do drive more dangerously than taxis. They generally don't know the city. They regularly make U-turns in the middle of the street. They pull into and park in bike lanes. They drive looking at their screens, not paying attention. They are dangerous.
I just have a question. Mm-hmm. And I just a simple question. Kelly, you can tell me if I'm wrong. Aren't cabs allowed? They are allowed to block bike lanes. Just that's part of what they can do when they're picking people up. They're allowed that by San Francisco State, San Francisco law, right?
Well, technically, you're only taxi drivers only allowed to use the bike lane to drop off handicapped people. But the general sort of rule of the road is that in a taxi, you're getting somebody out of your cab or you're getting them in, and it's a pretty fast process. So when a taxi hops into a bike lane to dump somebody, it's like they're there for 30, 40 seconds or whatever, you know, and then they're gone.
Well,
same with picking up.
But on the back of these taxi cabs, it says specifically they're allowed.
I'm telling you what it says. It says it's for handicapped people.
Okay.
The law says handicapped people.
Okay, we've got one quick call from Michael. With only 2 minutes to go, Michael, you had an accident in a Lyft vehicle Saturday. Can you just quickly talk about what your concern is? We've got less than 2 minutes.
Yeah, I was driving in Glen Park in San Francisco. It was an Uber driver. It was a four-way stop sign, and I was the first to arrive. There were two other cars, and so I proceeded through the four-way intersection. An Uber driver came, did not stop, hit my car, and took off, hit and run.
Well, we want to assume that that was isolated, Michael. I'm sure that you have thoughts about whether Uber drivers are safe, but I'm going to give Ron Childress a chance with 30 seconds left. Ron, your thoughts as we end the show.
I'm sorry, my thoughts regarding what?
Regarding the safety of ride-hailing drivers, the training, should people feel safe with them on the roads quickly?
As far as I'm concerned, yes. You just have to. It's like anybody. You got to be careful who you're riding with.
All right.
Doesn't matter who.
Kelly DeSaint, taxi driver in San Francisco. Quickly, your thoughts on the safety of the
ride? I think people are not safe on the road with untrained drivers functioning as taxi cabs, period.
Who knew that this issue was had so many handles? Thank you so much, Kelly DeSaint and Ron Childress. And thank all of you for calling. Your call is produced at KALW. I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call.